welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's past. I'm Mark LeVonier. In this hour, variety programs. Coming up later, it's Hollywood's Open House from 1948. But first, it's the NBC show Old Gold Time, and for the Armed Forces Radio Service, renamed the Frank Morgan Show, after the comedian who's hosting it. This from October 10th, 1947.
From Hollywood, it's the Frank Morgan Show. This is Marvin Miller, ladies and gentlemen, ushering in another fun-packed session with that lovable, laughable Frank Morgan, the genial Don Ameche, and charming Francis Langford with Armin Dragon and the orchestra. But right now, here's Francis Langford to sing.
Every time it rains, and it's from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune falling all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. When you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you.
And now here is your host for the evening, Don Ameche.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. Tonight we have an extremely interesting guest.
Who is he, Don? Anybody I know?
No, I hardly think so, Carmen. This gentleman is a member of a rare profession, an archaeologist.
Oh, is he from RKO?
He has nothing to do with the movies.
Oh.
At the head of the Los Angeles County Museum is a gifted art historian who is admired and respected by a staff of over 100 workers, including 30 curators. He very graciously consented to drop in this evening and gives me real pleasure to present the director of the Los Angeles County Museum, James H. Breasted, Jr. Mr. Breasted?
Thank you, Mr. Ameche.
Let me introduce you to some of our people. This is Miss Langford.
Oh, Miss Langford.
How do you do, Mr. Breasted?
And our orchestra leader, Carmen Dragon.
So you're a fellow who runs the place. You know, I have to take my kids down to that museum every week.
Well, it's very educational, Mr. Dragon. Which department do they like best?
Oh, we never go in. They just like the trolley ride.
It's a great institution, the trolley car, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to your institution, Mr. Breasted. Which department at the museum attracts the largest number of visitors?
Well, it's hard to say, but I believe most people are interested in natural history. Our specimens are extremely lifelike.
Yes, I should say they are. You have no working knowledge of taxidermy, have you?
Very limited. The only time I do any stuffing is around Thanksgiving.
That's pretty funny, boy. He's all right.
Oh. Thank you.
You know, the first job I ever had was for a taxidermist right here in Los Angeles.
Were you any good at it, Carmen?
Not much. The first day I got a hold of a little deer and stuffed her, but it was no use.
It wasn't? Well, maybe the girl was too full to be friendly.
I always feed him very lightly before.
Oh, I wasn't feeding anybody, Frank.
Oh.
This little deer was in the back of a taxidermist shop.
Well, no wonder. Why didn't you take the girl to Westlake Park or get a
Frank.
Couple of...
Frank!
It has nothing to do with girls.
Oh, no girls. Gets a dollar here every week. I'm not going to...
No, you don't. No, you don't. You can't walk off and on like this.
Take your grubby paws off me, Dodger.
Please, fellas. Remember who's standing here.
I don't give a continental who's standing. I don't... Where'd you find this relic, Dodger?
Relic? If you must know, Morgan, I found him down at the county museum.
Well, they didn't do a good job on him. I've seen stuffed weasels that look more lifelike than he does. How long's he been dead?
Beg your pardon.
Mr. Morgan, this is very embarrassing.
Well, it's Dodger's own fault for... Oh. Hello, my dear.
Hello.
Yeah, aren't you the dove dancer at the Burbank Follies?
Dove dancer?
How do you get those birds to perch just where you want them?
Frank!
Why?
This is Frances Langford, and she's no dub dancer. She's a singer.
Oh, Frances dancing. Yes, of course. I'm sorry if I ruffled your feathers, my child. How can I make it up to you?
Well, that's not necessary, Mr. Morgan.
Yes, but it is. I wish you'd drop by my place this evening and join me in a bottle of Paul Roget 28. And I'd be delighted to show you my private museum.
Museum?
Finest gallery in the world. Contains a complete hall of archaeology, ethnology, and Egyptology.
Excuse me, Mr. Morgan.
What is it, son?
Well, do you actually have a collection of fossils in your house?
This is no time to discuss my wife's relatives. And please don't interrupt me when I'm talking to a young lady. What time shall I expect you, my dear?
Well...
Come early and I'll let you handle my Neanderthal skull and scrutinize my petrified bones. Is it a date?
I don't think I can make it, but I'll be glad to send my husband.
Oh, your husband.
He's very interested in old relics.
Yes, well, this old relic's not interested in husbands.
Goodbye, Mr. Morgan.
Well, what a lovely specimen. She'd have made a wonderful addition to my collection of ancient stone sculpture.
Ancient stone sculpture?
Yes, she's so statuesque, and I'm such a chiseler.
Oh, Frank, what's all this hogwash about ancient stone sculpture?
Hogwash?
Gentlemen, I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me.
Oh, please, please, don't leave yet. You're going to come in mighty handy in a minute.
Well, I'd like to stay, but I have to go get back to the museum. A lot of people are waiting for me.
Yes, well, I don't doubt it, son. Do you pose the missing link?
He doesn't pose, he's the real thing. I mean, he's the head.
Well, he is. I'd hate to see the rest of the body.
Frank, did you ever hear of James H. Breasted, Jr.?
Yes. Come to think of it, the name is familiar. Wasn't he the director of the Los Angeles County Museum?
He still is, Mr. Morgan.
Really? I didn't know he got out of jail. Well, he was a great man, but this bedstead...
Breasted?
Yes. Well, he was the black sheep of the family. I once engaged him as the second porter on one of my expeditions into the Valley of the Kings.
Second porter?
Yes. There was nobody else available, so I sobered him up and hired him.
Mr. Morgan,
I don't want to annoy you.
Yeah, well, you do, you know.
I'm sorry, but you seem to know this Brisket or Bedstead or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Pretzel.
Yes, you seem to know him.
Yes, I know the character in question, and he's a very questionable character.
Frank, you say you engaged Mr. Breasted as a porter on one of your expeditions?
Reluctantly. The tomb of Tutankhamun had not yet been discovered.
Frank, cut out the double talk.
What
this is James H. Breasted, Jr., director of the Los Angeles County Museum.
Double breasted. Junior County.
Would you like to apologize, you faker?
I don't like to intrude, Don.
I was waiting for you. You're that nice, plum young man that comes to my rescue each week, aren't you?
Yes, I am, Mr. Morgan.
Hurry up and change the subject so I can get off the hook.
But I'm interested in the subject under discussion, and I'd love to hear about your expedition.
Why, I'm surprised at you, Marvin, falling for this baloney week in and week out. He doesn't know anything about archaeology.
On the contrary, Mr. Amici. Mr. Morgan sounds well-versed on the subject.
I do? I mean, I do. Most of my Oriental discoveries repose in the British Museum. But there's one expedition I'll never forget to my dying day.
I'd love to hear about it.
Why don't you shut up?
I was commissioned to locate the sarcophagus of the great King Ramesses I.
The first.
King Ramesses was known to have been the heaviest of all Egyptian pharaohs, weighing 630 pounds in his sandals and toga.
Oh, they must have had heavy sandals in those days.
Well, they had big togas, too. Said that King Ramesses was the daddy of all mummies.
Well, did you have any idea where to look for him, Mr. Morgan?
Not an inkling. As soon as I arrived at Alexandria, I changed to my pith helmet and shorts and mounted a camel to begin my search.
Where were you riding on the camel, Mr. Morgan?
In the usual place, between the humps. After 12 days on the blistering desert, my supplies ran out, and I had nothing left but a loaded pistol and a full goat skin.
A goat skin full of what?
Goat. He grew oppressive, and so did the goat. So I tied him to a mirage and continued on my journey. That night, I reached the outskirts of Giza.
Yeah, well, what about the mummy?
Well, I'm coming to that. I found myself among the great pyramids and soon ran across an enormous stone mausoleum.
3 hours of frantic digging disclosed a miniature catafalque.
Miniature catafalque? What's that?
Short beer.
I'll have a large one.
Angostura?
Just a bucket.
Well, here's looking at... What are we talking about?
You were opening the beer.
Yes. Unfortunately, the chamber had been looted. I had just about given up hope when I noticed my camel pawing at the ground outside another massive granite structure. Gentlemen, the dumb beast had led me to the right spot.
You found Ramses inside?
Hey, you've guessed it. There he was, shrouded in his wrappings, lying peacefully in his weird Egyptian tomb.
Sphinx?
A little. Don't worry. Oh, Sphinx! You mean... No, it was one of the pyramids.
Well, this is really exciting.
It was then that misfortune struck. In my eagerness to remove the mummy, I tripped over a rare old vacuum cleaner and struck my head...
Old vacuum cleaner?
Yes, a Hoover, circa 1395.
Circa 1395?
Marked down from $14. I lay unconscious in the dark crypt for 22 days, never once emerging from my cataleptic state.
Too bad nobody found you. They might have buried you.
Not in Egypt, my boy. No. Anybody who is acquainted with the Egypt burial customs will tell you they take the utmost precaution.
Why is that?
In the days of the pharaohs, premature burial was a common thing. Huh? In order to avoid recurrences, they devised a very elaborate system to make sure there was no spark of life left in the king before they mummified him.
What was the system?
When a king passed away, they carried him on a jewel litter to his last resting place.
A litter.
Feasted and drank for 9 days. All the time sprinkling his face with the fragrant wines of Egypt.
That's good.
On the 9th day, 200 of the most beautiful native dancing girls, very lightly clad, danced for hours around the deceased king, showering him with lovely glances and frequent kisses.
Well, how did that stop premature burial?
Well, if he didn't wake up then, they knew he was dead.
Now, here are Don Amici and Francis Langford as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon Is Over. The Bickersons have retired. Poor husband John, a chronic insomniac and suffering from Grunter's disease, struggles during an acute attack of his ailment, while Blanche Bickerson attempts to describe his symptoms over the phone to Dr. Hersey. Listen.
This is worse than ever, Dr. Hersey. Can't you come over?
Mrs. Bickerson, it's almost 3 o'clock, and I'm sure his condition isn't critical. I'll come over in the morning.
But he might recover by morning. I wouldn't want that to happen.
What?
I mean, I don't want you to make the trip for nothing.
Oh, it won't be for nothing, Mrs. Bickerson. I'll charge you.
Oh. Do you charge for telephone advice, Dr. Hersey?
When I can be of some help, but there isn't anything I can suggest now.
Wait a minute. I'll carry the phone into the bedroom, and you can hear what John's going through. Listen.
In your washing machine, Mrs. Bickerson.
That's my husband.
Incredible. Tell him to do that again.
I don't have to. He will.
Well, there's only one thing I...
can't hear you, Doctor. Wait till I get the phone out of the room. Now, what were you saying?
It's definitely a post-pharyngeal condition, and that roaring intake indicates he's a mouth breather.
No, he's not, Doctor.
Well, now, Mrs. Bickerson, this isn't the first case of aggravated snoring I've run into, and I can recognize a mouth breather when I hear one.
Maybe, but John isn't breathing through his mouth.
What makes you so sure?
I taped it shut with court plaster.
That isn't wise, Mrs. Bickerson. I'd rather have you tape his nostrils. It's less dangerous.
I tried that last night. I think my husband snores through his pores.
Well, he refuses to submit to surgery. There's nothing else I can suggest. Good night, Mrs. Bickerson.
Good night, Dr. Hersey. Maybe John's quiet now. making that silly noise? What's the... Oh, for heaven's sake, the adhesive tape.
Oh! What did you do that for? What's the matter with you, Blanche? Who taped up my mouth?
I put it on to stop you from snoring.
I never heard of such a thing. You had to go and tape my mouth just when I'm raising a mustache. You pulled out every hair.
Now, I'm glad. That mustache looked horrible anyway.
It did not. Looked as good as yours.
John Bickerson.
Well, you hurt me.
My skin is as smooth as a baby's and you know it. You'd better say you're sorry for what you said to me, John Bickerson.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. Put the lights out.
You've got the worst disposition of anybody I ever met. You're not the same man I married.
Don't tell me there's a loophole.
No, it's too bad about you. You're no bargain, you know. I could have done better, I'm sure.
I swear sometimes I wish you'd have married the first idiot who proposed to you.
I did.
Very funny. What are you doing out of bed at this time of the night anyway?
I'm too nervous to sleep. I have to make a speech tomorrow at the women's club, and I'm scared to death.
What women's club?
The Little Helpers of the Young, Old, and Helpless.
The Young, Old, and Helpless?
Yes. I'm on the helpless committee.
I bet you're the chairman.
No, I'm only the fourth assistant temporary vice chairman. That Mrs. Cluster is the chairman.
Who?
You know Mrs. Cluster, John. That's the little old lady that lives next door.
Little old lady.
She cut her hair real short yesterday. What do you think she looks like?
A little old man.
She does not. She looks very cute. She's the one who got me to join the organization.
I'm not interested. I'm sleepy.
Sure. It's all right for you men to belong to your lodges and clubs and heaven only knows what.
Yeah.
But you can't stand the thought of your wives organizing. Don't you believe in clubs for women?
Clubs, sandbags, chloroform, anything. Why don't you tell me all about it in the morning, Blanche? Good night.
John, don't be so mean to me when I'm so upset. Why don't you say something nice to me before you go to sleep? You love me as much as you used to?
No.
Am I the prettiest girl you ever saw? And would the world end for you if you ever lost me?
No.
See, you can say the sweetest things when you want to. Tell me some more.
That's all I could think of.
Well, just tell me you never loved anybody else but me.
I never loved anyone else.
You swear to it?
I swear to it.
I don't believe it.
Oh, help me, it's the truth, Blanche. I'll admit I've often admired women for their looks, background, or intelligence, but with you, it's love, nothing else. Go to sleep.
I can't sleep, I tell you. I keep thinking about the meeting tomorrow.
Well, don't go.
I have to go.
Why?
Because we're having it here.
Well, what did you do that for? Those dames will mess up the whole house.
They can't make it look any worse than it does now. I'm ashamed of the place, John. The rug needs cleaning, and we need new wallpaper in the hall.
The wallpaper looks fine. It hasn't been on there 4 years.
I know, but nobody else wallpapers their hall with old racing forms.
That's because they have no imagination. Looks different, and it didn't cost anything.
Well, I want new wallpaper just the same.
Okay, I'll take care of it tomorrow.
You say it, but you won't do it. Get up and do it now.
What?
Get up and wallpaper the hall.
Oh, you must be out of your mind, Blanche. It's almost 4 o'clock in the morning. Why don't you let me sleep?
Because you won't do anything to help me.
Okay, put on the lights. Where's my bourbon?
There isn't any.
No bourbon. There was a full jigger in that bottle, Blanche. Now, who stole it?
Don't get hysterical. I used it to take a stain out of your gray pants.
That was a bourbon stain. Zipped out of my coffee cup this morning. Why didn't you use cleaning fluid?
I couldn't find any, and I told you not to yell at me. You wouldn't raise your voice to Gloria Gooseby.
Oh, now don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
Believe me, if she ever slapped you once, you'd give up quick enough.
She slapped me dozens of times, and I never give up. I mean, I hate Gloria Gooseby, and I wish she'd never been born. I swear if I hear you mention her name again, I'll leave town.
That's right. Run out on me in my hour of need. Leave me here without a nickel. Get on the super chief and go to Chicago.
Nobody's getting on the super chief.
I'll follow you to the station and run in front of the train. Maybe I'll trip. The locomotive is bearing down on me at 60 miles an hour while you sit in the drawing room smoking a big fat cigar.
Blanche!
Why don't you pull the emergency cord, John?
Stop working yourself into a frenzy. You just put on that act to make me forget how mad I am. It's the truth, isn't it? Why don't you admit it?
Oh, hush up and go to sleep.
Yes, go to sleep, she tells me. Cleans my pants with my last shot of bourbon. Takes a train to Chicago. Now she tells me to go to sleep. I'll never sleep it. Another wink as long.
telephone. Answer it.
Yeah, I never saw it to fail. The minute I... Out! Hello.
Hello. Do you have an owl show tonight?
An owl show?
Would you please tell me the name of the feature picture?
Drop dead!
Who's in it?
You are! Everything happens to me. Put out the lights, Blanche. I'll never live through this night.
Are you very angry, John?
No, I'm just sick.
You love me?
What have you done?
Well, I was so upset about my speech that I forgot to give you something that came for you yesterday.
A letter?
Special delivery and registered. It was addressed to you and marked strictly personal and private.
No. What did it say?
Well, you needn't be so snide about it, John.
Snide?
I wouldn't have read it, but I accidentally steamed it open while I was pouring myself a cup of tea.
Accidentally, hmm?
Here it is.
Yeah. Oh, it's from the government.
Good night, John.
Mr. John Bickerson, sir, in checking your return for 1946, we find you have overpaid your tax. Enclosed fine check for $76.50. The couple... What? Oh, what a break. I find... Blanche.
Yes, John?
Where's the check?
What?
What did you do with my $76? What did you do with my money?
If you'll stop screaming, I'll tell you.
Well?
I bought you a Christmas present with it.
A Christmas present for me? Well... Why did you say so, Blanche? What did you get me?
Wait till I put it on.
Put it on? I thought you got something for me.
Well, you'll enjoy it as much as I will. It's a beaded bed jacket.
A beaded bed jacket?
For formal sleeping. You'll love it, John.
I'll hate it. I scrimp and save and deny myself everything. I cut down your old dresses to make underwear for myself. I ought to take
you
and me.
Don't you dare threaten me, John Bickerson. I'm entitled to a little luxury, too. I work just as hard as you do, and I never have any pleasure at all.
Okay, okay, okay.
I'm fed up with the way you carry on over every penny I spend. Don't you think that I
haven't...
Okay,
I'll go to sleep and forget about it.
No, you won't. I'm going to give you a piece of my mind.
Oh.
You've had it coming to you for a long time.
Long time.
You think you're the only one who can...
What's the matter?
My jaw, I can't talk.
You can't talk? Well, lie still. Don't touch it. I'll call Dr. Hersey. Now, don't be scared. I'm sure it's only temporary.
Hello?
Hello. Dr. Hersey, this is John Bickerson.
Again?
Yes. I think my wife has dislocated her jaw. She can't talk.
She can't move her jaw at all?
No. If you're in the neighborhood sometime next week, you might drop in.
Very well.
Good night, Doctor. Good night, Blaine.
This song is for you if your world is narrowed down to one person. It's for you if your dreams reach the heights of a cottage and the breadth of a garden. It's for you if you can think of the future only in terms of the plural, never in the singular. It's for you if you've reached a state of heart where every love song seems to have been written for you.
There is no greater love than what I feel for you. No greater love, no heart so true. There is no greater thrill than what you bring to me. No sweeter song than what you sing. No grief. than what I feel.
Marvin Miller, again putting the lid on another Frank Morgan show. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Old Gold Time, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 10th of October, 1947, that Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast called the Frank Morgan Show. Morgan, you know, from his appearance as the man behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. On screen from the year of the broadcast we just heard, he was in one picture alongside Lana Turner, Van Heflin, and Donna Reed in the romantic adventure Green Dolphin Street. You're listening to an hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark LeVonier. Don Amici was the host of the show we just heard, and coming up next, his brother Jim is the host for Hollywood's Open House. This syndicated broadcast first heard on January 15th, 1948.
Is Hollywood's Open House. Starring Enrique Madrigal, his violin, and his orchestra, featuring Hollywood's comic star, Rags Ragland, with an all-star supporting cast, and yours truly, Jim Amici. And our very extra special guest, the incomparable Hildegard.
This session of Hollywood's Open House, we're privileged to again present a great comedian. Actually, he's no longer with us, for Rags Ragland is dead. All of us who knew Rags will miss him. We'll miss his great talent, his ability to make people laugh. Before Rags passed away, we were fortunate to electrically transcribe one of his greatest comedy routines. And now we're going to be able to hear that routine again, to hear Rags Ragland again. The next voice you'll hear is that of our genial host, Jim Amici.
Oh, Enrique. Enrique Montgomery, come here.
You want me, Jim? What's wrong?
Well, have you seen Rags Ragland around anywhere?
No, I haven't seen him anywhere. Why?
Well, he's supposed to be here right now. I stayed up all night memorizing a special introduction for him, all about what a fine fellow he is, what a great comedian, and how wonderful he was in pictures like Meet the People, Girl Crazy, Dewberry Was a Lady, Anchors Away, The Cannibal Ghost, and now he isn't even here.
Is that all? I know what it is, Jim.
You do? Where?
Downstairs. There are some people down there, and they won't let him come up.
Won't let him? Well, why?
On account of his beard.
The beard? What beard?
The beard on Rex Ragland's face. They're taking a whole bunch of pictures.
Holy smoke, a fine time to be taking pictures. We've got to find him and get him up here. Send someone down there.
Never mind, Jim. Here I am. Here I am.
Rags. Hurry up. What's the idea of stopping to have pictures taken?
Oh, but it's important. It's for publicity.
Oh, publicity.
Sure. They took all kinds of pictures. Full face, profile.
But why?
Well, like I said, for publicity. They're going to build me up. Imagine, Jim. Pictures of me all over the United States.
Oh, that's fine. All over the United States.
That's what they said. They're going to put up my picture in every post office in the country.
Oh, Rags, how do you get into all this trouble?
Me? I never get in trouble.
Oh, is that so? Well, what about that traffic cop I saw you arguing with yesterday?
We weren't arguing. Just a friendly conversation.
Oh, sure.
Sure. I'll tell you how it happened. I got hold of a car, see, and I was driving down 6th Avenue over near Radio City. And the first thing I know, I hear the peculiar kind of a noise.
Hey, you! Can't you hear my whistle? Pull over to the curb. Now get out of that car and come over here. Yes, you, come on over here.
Yes, sir.
Do you know you were just going 60 miles an hour the wrong way on a one-way street? You crossed the white line, passed the red light, and now you're parked by a fire plug.
Something wrong?
Something wrong? You only broke every traffic rule in the city. Now tell me, where were you going in such a hurry?
Oh, I was going to the fight. You see, One Punch Kelly is fighting K.O. Gloom, and I'm a little late.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to give you a ticket.
Hey, can you spare another one? My wife, she'd like to go to see the fights, too.
She would. Well, this ticket won't take you to see One Punch Kelly. This ticket will take you to see Judge O'Brien.
Who's he fighting?
He'll be fighting you at 9 o'clock in the morning. Were you ever up before Judge O'Brien?
Now, what time does the judge get up?
About 6:30. How do I know what time he gets up? Now, let me see your license.
Oh, I'm not getting married.
I mean your driver's license.
Oh, that old thing. Oh, the driver's license.
Yeah, driver's license.
Let's see it. Driver's license. It's in my wallet. I left it home on the dresser.
Oh, I see. But you do have a driver's license.
Oh, sure.
Did you take a test?
Uh-huh.
What happened?
Came back no blood.
Oh, no blood. Well, what kind of a test did you take to get your license?
Oh, there's nothing to it. You meet the fella, you get in the car, you drive around the block, you stop, you start, you go ahead, you back up, park at the curb, put $5 in the matchbox, drop it on the floor. There's no trouble at all. Everything is fine.
No trouble at all. Very clever. Now, let's get back to some of these violations. Do you know anything about traffic rules?
Oh, sure. I know all about the rules.
Well, what is the white line in the middle of the road for?
That's for bicycles.
Oh, for bicycles, I see. Now, do you see those one-way street arrows on the post? Do you know what that means?
Sure. It tells you which way the wind blows.
The way the wind blows, I see. But supposing an arrow is pointed one way on a one-way street and the other way on another street, what does that mean?
Wind blows up one street and down the other.
Oh, it does. Very smart. Now, how about the traffic lights?
Oh, I see those every once in a while.
You do, huh? Well, do you know what they mean?
Sure.
All right. What does a red light mean?
Stop.
That's fine. Now, what does the green light mean?
Go ahead.
Amazing. And what does the yellow light stand for?
God help those that are walking.
Oh, my. Tell me, who does the car belong to?
Oh, that I don't know.
Oh, a stolen car, hey? Well, as long as you were stealing a car, why did you steal a push cart with headlights?
Now, don't talk about that car.
Why not?
I did a lot of work on that car.
Oh, you did?
I painted it and everything.
Oh, well, tell me, why did you paint one half of the car yellow and the other half purple?
Well, that's in case if I have an accident, the witnesses will get mixed up.
Oh, I see. Very good. Now, how are the brakes on the car?
The what?
The brakes.
Brakes. Oh, there's no accessories came with the car.
Accessories? What are you talking about? Brakes are not accessories. Brakes are on all cars. Now, tell me, how do you stop that car?
Oh, just lean out and drag my foot.
Oh, you do, I see. Driving a car with no brakes at 60 miles an hour. Say, tell me, aren't you afraid?
Oh, no. I keep my eyes closed.
You do.
Well, don't worry. I'm a very careful driver.
Oh, you are?
Sure. Sometimes I even drive on the sidewalk.
Oh, please. Why, you poor fool. Don't you know the difference between a sidewalk and a street?
Sure. When I'm on the sidewalk, I hit more people.
But you do.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I got 8.
Only 8. Oh. Say, another thing. I noticed that there's no license plate on the car. Now, where are you from?
New Jersey.
Oh, one of those Jersey wise guys. Come all the way over here to New York to break all the laws. I bet you had a tough time with all that traffic coming over here.
No. Just went right through.
Oh, you did. Now, look, you seem to be a pretty nice guy. Now, if you'll answer one question for me, I'll tear up this ticket.
Okay.
Now, listen carefully. How in the world did you ever get through the Holland Tunnel?
Well, there's an opening on the other end.
Yeah, there.
Hollywood's Memory Lane. Hollywood is a land of tinsel and glitter. It's a shadow land where almost nothing is permanent. Exceptions to this rule have been few, but there's one great exception. A motion picture which will live in our hearts and in our minds for many a year. It's titled The Life of Emile Zola. We bring it to you now in our own radio version based on authentic material from The Life of Zola.
In the name of the people of France, Alfred Dreyfus, captain of the 14th Regiment, having been found guilty of the crime of treason, is condemned to deportation and imprisonment for life. He is to be publicly degraded, stripped of his arms and dismissed from the service of France, thus forfeiting his privileges, his decorations, and his right to bear arms forever.
Pardon me, Monsieur Zola. Madame Dreyfus is here to see you.
Yeah, Dreyfus? Is there no getting away from that name? All right, I'll see him.
You may come in, Madame Dreyfus.
Thank you. Thank you, Monsieur Zola, for seeing me.
I haven't much time.
I shall be brief, Monsieur Zola. I've come to ask your help.
My help? I can't see in what way I can be of any help to you.
You know that my husband...
Yes, yes, I know all about him. Who in France does not know about him? He's a traitor.
My husband is not a traitor, Monsieur Zola. He's innocent. Oh, I beg you to take his side and publish his innocence to the world.
I declare the innocence of a man judged guilty by a military court?
I have proof of his innocence. Unquestionable proof. Look, it's all here in this portfolio. I'll leave it here with you. Read it, Monsieur Zola. And decide for yourself whether Alfred Dreyfus is a traitor. And decide what you must do if he is innocent.
Emile, you'll be ruined if you defend Dreyfus.
The man is innocent.
He's been tried and found guilty.
The man is innocent.
Oh, very well. Now, what do you want to do?
I've written a letter to the President of France. I want you to publish it in your newspaper.
Oh, but Emile,
Wait. I'll read it to you. Mr. President of the Republic, permit me to tell you that on your record, and the history of France is now being threatened with a most shameful blot, the Dreyfus affair. Dreyfus is innocent. This, Mr. President, is the simple truth. Therefore, I must speak and I must accuse. I accuse the Minister of War of having concealed decisive proof of the innocence of Alfred Dreyfus. I accuse the Chief of Staff of being an accomplice in the same crime. I accuse the War Office of having viciously led a campaign to misdirect the public opinion in order to cover up its own injustice and its own sin. Mr. President, this wrong must be righted. For in a nation of free men, an injustice to one is a dangerous transgression against all.
Emile, you know what the army will do to you if you publish that?
Yes, yes, I know. They'll put me on trial for libel. They'll try to ruin me. Well, let them. In the freedom of this one man, I see the freedom of all men. In his unjust imprisonment, I see the imprisonment of the spirit of all mankind.
In a moment, we will bring you the second act of the life of Emile Zola. And now, Act Two of the life of Emile Zola.
Silence. We must have silence in this court. Silence. Excellency, is this a trial in a court of law, or is this a farce upon a stage?
You do not think Monsieur Zola is receiving a fair trial?
No, he is not.
Your only restriction is that you may not introduce the case of Alfred Dreyfus into the trial of Monsieur Zola. It is irrelevant.
Irrelevant? Monsieur Zola is accused of criminal libel, of falsely accusing the army of injustice. How can I possibly clear Monsieur Zola of this charge unless I prove that Monsieur Dreyfus is innocent?
That is your problem.
Your Excellency, may I speak in my own defense?
Well, that is within the law. You may speak, Monsieur Zola.
Thank you. Gentlemen of the jury, each man who lives desires above all to serve his country. Each man fulfills this task as best he can. Some choose the way of the sword, as did Alfred Dreyfus. Some choose the way of the pen, as did I. But you, gentlemen of the jury, have been granted the privilege of serving your country in the greatest of all ways, through justice. You are citizens of a land which gave truth and justice to the world. You know that so long as a single innocent man suffers unjustly, no man can hope for justice. It's for this reason that at this solemn moment, in the presence of this tribunal which is representative of human justice before the whole world, I swear to you that Alfred Dreyfus is innocent. I swear to you that he is no longer a mere individual,
He's a symbol. A symbol of the world of free and innocent men. I swear to you that if you allow him to suffer and continue in his unjust punishment, you place in danger not only yourselves, but your children and your children's children, and that you destroy forever the things by which we have lived and for which we have died. Liberty, equality, and justice.
In the name of the people of France, Alfred Dreyfus, having been found innocent of the crime of treason, is created major in the army of France. In addition, he is to be publicly restored to his arms and to the army of France, thus regaining his privileges, his decorations, and his right to bear arms forever.
Our star maestro, Enrique Madriguera, has been officially named the musical ambassador of the Americas. Now, what this engrossing title really means is that no one can play the music of the Western Hemisphere with quite the dash and zest that he has. We've had some fine samples of his arrangements of tunes originating north of the border, and now he steps forward to bring us a sample of the romantic rhythms of south of the border. Enrique Madriguera and his violin in a special arrangement of the tantalizing tango A Media Luz. Hildegard, the incomparable Hildegard. Enrique, Enrique, look who's here.
You're telling me? Am I looking? Am I seeing?
Ah, Hildegard, it's wonderful having you here.
Hello, Hildegard.
Yeah, Henri, go away. Hildegard is here now.
Why do you think I'm staying here?
Oh, thank you, Enrique. It's so nice to see you again.
Well, it's nice being among friends, even if they aren't yours.
And I like you too, Jim.
Yeah, that's me. One of a multitude.
Oh, but I really am sorry I got you so mixed up. You see, it seems so strange for me to be on a program about Hollywood, And because, well, I haven't even been to Hollywood. That's why it's so strange.
To which I say, so much the worse for Hollywood.
Oh, Jim, you know just the right thing to say to a girl.
But, Hildegard, you
now,
have been...
Now, listen, Enrique. If you want an exclusive monopoly on Hildegard, why don't you just say so?
So?
Boys, boys! What were you going to say to me, Enrique?
Just that you really have been to Hollywood.
I have. I don't know I've been there.
Certainly you have. You've been there through your songs. Each time Hildegard sings a song and makes it popular, Hollywood uses it. You sing a song called The Last Time I Saw Paris, don't you?
I certainly do.
Well, Hollywood used that song in a movie.
All right, Enrique, now it's my turn. Hildegard, you have still another song to sing, the one Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer bought up before the song was even released.
Oh, you mean All of a Sudden My Heart Sings?
Right. And now we're going to have the great privilege and pleasure of hearing this great new song as...
Hildegard.
Yes, yes, yes.
Would you like to hear a joke?
Sure.
I made it up myself.
Not you too, Enric. As a matter of fact, Enric, I just got an award from the Can You Top This Boys, and it's a beautiful golden egg. It's for telling the world's worst jokes in radio. And it... But go on, Enric. Now tell me
all
your
right.
joke.
I'll tell you. It goes like this. I say, Hildegard, the other night I woke up in the middle of a terrific dream, and there was something running around my room without any legs. And then you say, something running around your room without any legs. And then I say...
That's right. Water.
How did you know?
Good for you.
Please, may I go on now?
Sure.
Hildegard goes to the piano to play and sing in her own inimitable manner. All of a sudden, my heart sings.
All of a sudden, my heart sings when I remember little things. The way you dance and hold me tight. The way you kiss and say goodnight. The crazy things we say and do. The fun it is to be with you. Remembering all those little things. All of a sudden, my heart sings. The secret way you press my hand. To show me that you understand. The wind and rain upon your face. The breathless world of your embrace. Your little laugh and half surprise. The starlight gleaming in your eyes. The magic thrill that's in your touch. Oh, darling, I love you so much. The secret way you press my hand to let me know you understand. The wind and rain upon your face. The breathless world of your embrace. Your little laugh and half surprise. The starlight gleaming in your eyes. Remembering all those little things. All of a sudden, my heart
with Madrigal's own farewell signature, adios, this visit to Hollywood's open house comes to an end. The cast included Sylvia Lee, Don Douglas, and Louis Van Ruten. Our comedy star was Rags Raglan. Our guest star was the incomparable Hildegard. The script and all radio adaptations were written by Lee Shane. Original music was by Jack Belasco. The program was produced under the direction of Ray Green. This is Jim Amici inviting you to Hollywood's open house at the same time next week.
Hollywood's Open House, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 15th of January, 1948, a syndicated broadcast. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.